When my son Ian was about 9 years old, he got me into a bit of trouble with the parents of some of the children in the church school in the San Mateo Unitarian Universalist Church, where I was minister for many years. Ian had told several of the younger kids that I had told him that Santa Claus, that Santa Claus story, was just a silly fairy tale. Well, a preacher is used to being misquoted from time to time, but not usually by her own child. Years before, when Ian was 5, he asked me if there really was a Santa. And I threw the question back to him. He decided that there really was, and I decided not to shake his belief. But 3 years later, after hearing the older kids at school debunking the Santa Claus myth, Ian asked me again. He said, in a very adult way, "Mom, I want you to tell me the truth. Is Santa Claus real or not?" This time, when I asked him what he believed, he said he thought there was no Santa. And I gathered by that time that he was ready for the truth. So I leveled with him. I admitted that what he heard in school is true. The story about some elfin gift giver riding through the sky with a herd of jet-powered reindeer and squeezing through chimneys to leave presents is not really true, but that it is a fun kind of story that young children enjoy believing in, as he himself did when he was younger. I never said that it was a silly fairy tale, and I also told him not to ruin the fun for his cousin and other younger children who still believe, but apparently Ian had forgotten my admonition about not ruining it for others, and I had to once again enlist him as a fellow co-conspirator in keeping the myth alive for the younger children. The Santa Claus myth is an enduring one, and Santa himself is a very old figure who only recently evolved into his present form. Today, one day after the Feast of St. Nicholas, I would like to spend just a few moments exploring the evolution of Santa Claus and the human inclination toward generosity that lies at the center of this story. Saint Nicholas, upon whom Santa is partly based, is said to have lived in the 3rd to 4th centuries and was the bishop of Myra, a Mediterranean seaport city in the country of Lycia, which is now part of Turkey. Not much is known for sure about this saint, and some scholars contend that he was fabricated as a Christian version of an ancient sea god named Hol Nikur. According to Christian stories, Nicholas was born to a wealthy family. His parents died when he was just 9, leaving him their fortune. Nicholas, a devout Christian, was in the habit of giving away large sums of money to the needy, and he did so in secret, usually at night. One legend about the saint involved 3 maidens, the daughters of a nobleman who had lost all his wealth and who had therefore no dowry for his daughters and barely enough to feed and clothe his daughters. Without a dowry, young women at the time could not marry, and with no other alternatives available to support the girls, the 3 daughters would have to have been sold into essentially slavery, essentially prostitution. When Nicholas was just a boy, he heard of this plight, and so the story goes, he crept up to their house at night and lowered a bag of gold, first into the eldest daughter's room through an open window. And with this valuable gift, she was able to marry. Then Nicholas did the same for each of the other daughters. But on the 3rd try, he was intercepted by the girl's father. And the father asked Nicholas why he bestowed his gifts in secret. Nicholas insisted that the father tell no one who had helped them. Now, in artists' depictions of this legend, Nicholas is sometimes pictured with three bags of gold, but in other versions, the bags have taken the shape of three gold balls. Later, when Nicholas became the patron saint of merchants, the three golden balls of Saint Nicholas became the symbol of pawnbrokers, to signify that one's merchandise is safe under the sign of the good saint. Nicholas was made a bishop while still a teenager. According to the legend, he had been traveling back from the Holy Land when his ship got caught in a terrible storm, and the sailors asked Nicholas to pray for their safety, which he did. And when the ship landed safely in Myra, Nicholas went to a church to offer thanks. The bishop there had recently died, and one bishop, who was taking part in the deliberations about a successor, reported having heard a voice the night before, which said that the first person to come into the church at a particular hour with the name of Nicholas should be named the new bishop. So in walked the young Nicholas, and though he at first refused, he was prevailed upon to accept the office. Saint Nicholas was purported to have been among those present at the famous church council of Nicaea in 325, the council called by Emperor Constantine to settle once and for all some disputes on theological points, such as the nature of Jesus. It was at this council that the Trinity was made the official doctrine of the church, and the minority Unitarian viewpoint, represented by Bishop Arius, was thrown out. It is not known exactly what role Nicholas may have had at the council, assuming there really was a bishop from Myra named Nicholas. In one legend, after a heated debate with a theological opponent, the ardent Trinitarian Nicholas slapped a fellow bishop and was put in jail in a cell overnight to cool off. Again, as the story goes, a miracle took place. Nicholas's shackles mysteriously came off during the night, and when he returned to the council, his point of view prevailed. Perhaps it was a Unitarian who got the goat of Saint Nicholas. In another miracle story, the bishop Nicholas persuaded the captains of several ships carrying grain from Constantinople to Alexandria to leave a year's supply of grain in Myra, where a severe food shortage was causing famine. Nicholas promised the ship captains that their larders would be full when they reached Alexandria, despite them sharing their grain with Myra. The grain saved the people from starvation, and when the bishop's promise of a miraculously refilled shipment came true, the captains and the sailors spread the news throughout the Mediterranean. Underneath this miraculous legend is a truth about generosity. Those who are generous, who share of their bounty, will themselves be fulfilled. Nicholas was said to have rescued ships caught in storms, and he became also the patron saint of sailors. He was to Christian sailors what the gods Neptune and Poseidon were to Roman and Greek sailors, their protector, or, if they were not in favor with the saint, their destroyer, since if he could calm a storm, presumably it was believed he could also bring one on. This association with the sea lends some credence to the recent idea that Nicholas was really an ancient sea god who was made into a Christian saint, as has definitely happened with other deities. Reverence for St. Nicholas was so firmly established by the Middle Ages that he was the most often invoked Christian saint or Christian figure after Jesus and Mary. Around the 12th century, people began leaving gifts in St. Nicholas's name on the eve of his feast day, December 6th. Parents caught on that the promise of a gift from the saint if you're good and a switch if you're bad would keep children in line. But since switching children was beneath the dignity of a saint, in some parts of Europe, St. Nicholas was split into the good saint and his horned and black-robed attendants. And these attendants were variously named Krampus, Necked Rupert, Ruklaus, and a number of other names. Ruklaus means rough Nicholas. In Holland, the shadow side of Santa was the devil himself, whom the Dutch called Black Peter. Some of these shadow Santa figures were female. One female figure, the Fana, is still expected by children in southern Italy on the 12th night. It is she in these regions, not Nicholas, who gives gifts and sweets for good children and a switch or call for naughty ones. Well, from all these legends, we can see some of the seeds of our modern Santa Claus myth. Saint Nick is a worker of miracles, the protector of children, the nighttime bestower of gifts, and one who will reward the good and perhaps punish or deprive the bad. But that old saint is still a far cry from the modern red-suited, white-bearded figure that we know. One of his modern features, the long white beard, derives from the figure of Odin, many scholars say, the ancient Norse god. Odin, or Woden, from whom we get the word Wednesday, which is Woden's day, was the chief of a trinity of northern European gods. He was called All-Father, and one story about him tells how he dedicated himself to humanity by hanging himself on a tree pierced by a spear, a story clearly echoed in Christianity. Odin had one eye and a long white beard and rode a white horse across the sky during the winter solstice, with his wide-brimmed hat fluttering in the wind. To this day, many Europeans picture Sinterklaas, as the Dutch call him, as a modern Woden, with a broad-brimmed hat and long white beard, who arrives either on the eve of St. Nicholas's Day or on Christmas Eve. Like Odin, Sinterklaas comes not with a retinue of reindeer, but on a white steed. It can be said that St. Nicholas arrived on American soil with Columbus, because on the Saint's Day, December 6th, 1492, Columbus entered the Haitian harbor of Bohio in the West Indies and named the port St. Nicholas in honor of the saint. But it was really the Dutch settlers in New Amsterdam who brought their Sinterklaas here. He was later adopted by the British settlers when New Amsterdam became New York in the mid-1600s. Then in the mid-1800s, two New Yorkers helped to give old St. Nick the appearance that he retains to this day. One was, of course, the professor and Episcopal minister Clement Clark Moore, supposedly author, some scholars disagree with this, of the immortal poem The Night Before Christmas, or it's also called A Visit from St. Nicholas. From Moore's poem, we get the sleigh and the reindeer instead of the European white horse, and we get a humorous picture of Santa as a jolly, overweight elf. The task of depicting this elfin gift giver, who has become so familiar to us, fell to the political cartoonist and Unitarian Thomas Nast. Nast was the cartoonist for Harper's Weekly, and he was also the one who drew first drew the Republican elephant and the Democratic donkey, as well as Uncle Sam dressed in stars and stripes. President Lincoln once said, "Thomas Nast has been our best recruiting sergeant because his cartoons helped in gaining sympathy for the Union cause." Nast drew many versions of Santa over many years. You see one on your order of service cover, drawn by Nast. And his Santa began to look more and more like our modern-day Santa. But it was not until he was asked to draw some of his Santas in color for a children's book, using a newly developed color printing process, that Santa acquired the familiar red suit. Nast had always thought of his pen and ink drawings of Santa as having a tan-colored suit. But this really, he thought, wouldn't do for a book featuring bright colors. So he dressed the jolly elf in a red suit with white ermine trim, and voila, we have our modern Santa Claus. It's a bit ironic when you think about it that old Saint Nicholas, the legendary 4th century defender of the Trinity against Unitarian and other heresies, would be given his definitive and very secular American appearance by a 19th century Unitarian. So we have in our modern Santa Claus a curious mixture. He is a defender of maidens, children, and orthodoxy, and the generous bearer of secret gifts. He is part Christian saint, part pagan god. Like a god, he knows if we're naughty or nice. Nowadays, of course, he's also a shill for the toy makers and the department stores, urging children to want and us to buy. I have sometimes been asked whether I think it is right and healthy to lie to children to keep the Santa Claus myth alive, especially given the modern, overly commercial uses to which he is put. I would like to answer this question by correcting my son's misinterpretation of what I said about Santa Claus. As I see it, the Santa story is not a silly fairy tale at all. It is a rich, mythic story which captures something of the spirit of the Christian Christmas as well as the ancient Yuletide season. It is really steeped in all of these traditions. In fact, there are Santa-like figures from non-Christian lands as well, gift bearers who help the needy and bring gifts to children, personifying that universal human impulse to generosity. So, should we skeptical Unitarian Universalists continue to honor this Trinitarian Christian saint and his antecedents and descendants by telling, singing, and reciting the Santa legend, creating in our children's minds a loving character, only to have to knock him off his tinsely pedestal when our kids and our grandkids are old enough to learn the truth? What do you think? I, for one, say yes. Let's enjoy our Santa myths. Our world, with its continued wars and human misery, needs the sense of hope and caring that a figure like Santa brings to us. At this darkest, coldest time of the year, the Santa story speaks of charity and of generosity. It lights up the eyes of children, and it brings even to us grumpy grown-ups a little warmth and a bit of humor and good cheer. We want to rise to express the best that is within us. We want to be generous and caring. The legend about the good saint giving anonymously to those in need, the secular stories of Santa delivering presents to children, and even the sight of the Salvation Army Santa ringing those bells to remind us of the need to be charitable, All of these images find a resonance within us year after year, because generosity and sharing are a part of who we are. Because we want to give of ourselves and our resources. Because we too want to partake in the jolly generosity of the season. Generosity is a spiritual discipline, and the stories of Saint Nicholas are in part about raising this discipline of giving to a fine art. So let us have our Santa Claus. And I close with this meditation, my little petition to Santa. Santa, spirit of hope and selfless giving, may you come to us once again to dress up our dreary, darkening world with your joyful presence. Come with bishop's scepter or great white steed, or sleigh speeding through the crisp night air, or ringing your bell over an open kettle, inviting our generosity. Come and enter our hearts while a million wide-eyed children perch upon your knee.